Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hey, this is Matt Cox, and we're going to be talking about how The Matrix is coming unraveled for Andrew Tate. Listen, The Matrix thought they had him, and I don't think they do. We've got his lawyer came out and said there's no way they can substantiate the claims against him. The prosecutor's going to have a major problem. We've also got multiple supposed victims that are coming out and saying, hey, this is untrue. It's absolutely untrue. They're seizing his assets. And listen, we've got some super interesting stuff to come to go over, and I really appreciate it. So check this out.
So where do you want to start?
I think, this is the thing. Like I read an article that essentially says the same thing that the five or six videos that I watched also said. They're all kind of saying the same thing, but you know, it's, you know, this stuff comes out and then it gets, you know, disseminated and gobbled up and regurgitated. And before you know it, the narrative changes slightly. But from what I can tell right now is that, I mean, being impartial and looking at what I saw and the transcription of what his lawyer just said, is that he is saying that based on the charges and based on the what essentially is like an indictment, kind of the factual stipulations that they presented to the judge in order to go and arrest him and hold him, she's saying that she doesn't see that the allegations support what he's being held for and or that he has broken the law, you know, at all. So you know, the problem is like transportation of, you know, transporting someone for the purposes of a sexual act or something. Like, you know, these are women that supposedly either were there in Romania or flew in willingly knowing they were going to work for him. So is that transportation, knowing you're flying in here to be a webcam girl and possibly, you know, do sexual things in front of the camera or do sexual acts or whatever. I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's a problem for the algorithm for me to say that, but, according to his lawyer and according to even the United States, like if I say, hey, do you want to fly in here and sleep together or, you know, he's very specific on what they're going to be doing and they fly in, then is that sex trafficking? No, that's not sex trafficking. Like these aren't girls that were lured in under false pretenses. And this is just what his lawyer's basically kind of saying. So she's saying he doesn't meet that criteria. So that's one thing that's extremely questionable. But, you know, to be fair and impartial, your lawyer's always going to back you up.
Yeah.
You know, your lawyer's always going to say that. There's nothing here that proves that he did anything. And you're like, okay, well, that's fine. But so Tate's lawyer is, of course, backing him up. What's she going to do? She's going to say, oh, yeah, this guy, he's in trouble. He did all this stuff. Like, she's not going to say that. But also, you know, there are some issues because if you read the comments, it's funny in the comment section of the videos that we've been putting up that people don't seem to be able to discern the difference between, you know, public opinion and facts. Mm-hmm. So if a lot of people allege that someone did something, it doesn't mean that they did that. And I can give you an example of that. I wrote a story called Devil Exposed. It's about a friend of mine, and I say a friend of mine, it's about a guy I met in prison and we became friends. So his name is Pierre Rossini, you know, and I wrote a book called Devil Exposed, and there were several people on his case that said that the victim in his case was shot in the head, and his body was buried in the desert. Now, the homicide detectives, and this was in California, the homicide detectives were going to people and saying, look, we know, that he was killed, and they already had heard from people how he was killed. So they would go to, and it had gotten around the circle of friends and associates of his. So when they would go to someone, they'd say, look, we know he's dead. What have you heard? And they would say, listen, I mean, you know, he got shot in the head, right? You know, they buried his body. And they'd go, yeah, that's what we heard. So they continued along that narrative, and they continued and continued. And so it got to a point where they only pursued people that were saying that he had been shot, his body had been rolled up in a sleeping bag, and they'd transported him in Rossini's car, and they buried him in the desert. Now, later on, what ended up happening was the guy that act. Now, they all said that Rossini shot him. Rossini shot him. Rossini put him in a sleeping bag. Rossini put him in the back of his car with the help of a few other people, and they buried his body. So, of course, they arrest Rossini. Multiple people are now ready to get on the stand and say, this is what happened. This is what I heard. And people that actually were like, I believe people that had actually helped transport the body were also saying that his body, that he'd been shot in the head. The other thing was there was a section of carpet that had been cut out of the bedroom. In the bedroom, there was a section of carpet in the bedroom and in the bedroom walk-in closet that had been removed. Now, once they grab Rossini and the truth comes out, the guy that actually killed him said, now this, by the way, this comes out after Rossini has pled guilty, because there are multiple people saying they're going to testify that he did this. So what did he do? He pled guilty. I can't let five people get on the stand and say, I shot the guy in the head, they helped me move the body, and that his body was buried in the desert. Even if I say that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, there's five people saying that they came in after the fact and helped dispose of the body. And I did help dispose of the body. Like I did, it was in my car, but I didn't shoot him. How does that look? These guys say you shot him. Everybody says they heard you shot him. Everybody says you did shoot him. The guys showed up, said you shot him, and there's pieces of carpet missing from the apartment that you live in. He pleads guilty. Later it comes out that another guy's name was, I remember his name was Nason something. Anyway, turns out Nason had gotten into an argument with the victim. During the argument, he choked him, got his arm around his neck, and broke his neck. He then he left the body there, and when Rossini came home later that night, he found the body. Now, he couldn't call the police because they were running a methamphetamine lab in that apartment. The carpet had been cut out because they'd spilled chemicals, and they had cut out the carpet in those areas. So when Rossini called several people to come help get rid of the body, they showed up. They saw that carpet was removed. The body was wrapped up in a sleeping bag. And they helped him put the body in the back of of his vehicle. Rossini then disposed of the body in a landfill. But everybody else said it was buried in the desert. Rossini says that's not what happened. Now, they never found the body. And Rossini said, if once I had pled guilty, I would have shown him where the body was. If that was the case, I would have said, hey, let's go out. I'll go show you where it is. I pled guilty. I would have been able to prove that I didn't shoot him in the head. My point is, later on, the true killer shows up and says he killed him. He broke his neck. They disposed of the body in a landfill. Rossini ended up pleading guilty for shooting him in the head and burying his body in the desert. Two different places of burial, two different forms of murder. Russini did not kill him, but he'd already pled guilty. The other guy pled guilty. Russini also had pled guilty to one count of conspiring. So it was almost impossible to get his case overturned because he'd also pled guilty for conspiring, even though the other guy ultimately had said that it was an accident. So what I'm saying is, a lot of times law enforcement, people put out these narratives that get consumed by the media and by everyone, and it gets repeated so much, it becomes what really happened, even though it's not what happened. Now, you know, there's a lot of other thing in that case, in Rossini's case, that you know, there was another murder, there was a lot of other things. But what I'm saying is, it's a great example of the difference between basically how public opinion can really hinder you. So, but there's a huge difference between public opinion, and public opinion can destroy you, even in a criminal case. A lot of people will say, well, public opinion doesn't harm you. You know, that doesn't matter, but that does matter. It can definitely matter in a case like this, because look at what's happening, whether it's true or not. If, for instance, a few years ago, when Tate's ex-girlfriend came out with that, there was that tape that was leaked of the two of them having sex, where it looked like he was being extremely abusive, when in fact, she then came out, made a couple of tapes that said, look, I'm the girl in the tape. He wasn't abusing me. We were playing around. It was rough, you know, it was rough sex, and I was not being abused, and he's not a woman beater, and all the things that were happening. But there was all this huge, huge outcry about what a scumbag he is. But the truth is, I've dated women that wanted to be choked. I've dated women that want to be spanked, that wanted to be, you know, all kinds of strange things. Taken out of context, that could certainly look bad. Luckily, this girl came out. She said, that's not what happened. This is what happened. It was consensual. I was totally into it. It's what happened. She's also come out recently again and come out with another video where she came out and she said, look, I dated this guy for years. He and his brother would never do anything like this. Like I've, you know, she was around them for years, never saw anything like the allegations that are out there. You know, is that true? I mean, what benefit there is to her, why she would say that that's not true, why she would be, especially he's in jail. Like if you were worried about somebody or scared of them, then I don't know why you would continue to come out and defend, especially an ex, you know, like that's the person. Yeah. Who wants
unless
to.
They're paying her or something is the right. Only other
that's,
thing, you know,
that's true. But both of them are in jail.
Yeah.
But so then maybe, is it their team?
Or maybe. Someone. Because their team is making moves and calling shots even while they're in jail, like we were talking about earlier. Now, I have no idea, but that's right. The only thing that I could think of.
Like, here's the other thing. By the way, here's the other thing that gets me. Anyway, there's videos of these, of one of the girls that is listed on the indictment, listed as a victim. She says back in April when she was questioned by the police, she said, I told them then I wasn't a victim, that this isn't what was going on. The police then listed her as a victim in order to get this arrest warrant and hold and be able to hold him. She's a victim. She's in Romania and she's a victim. You have to hold him. She could be in danger. She's saying, I'm not in danger and I'm not a victim. And I've told the police this. So that's a little bit frightening. And you know, here's what bothers me too. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, yeah, it's almost like, you know, if someone, whoever's in charge or could be in charge of that thing, like if they have a preconceived notion about whether they like this guy or not, just because he's everywhere and everything he says is, you know, insane or super polarizing, like, you know, they're just out to get him. It could be.
I mean, it could be a dirty call. Look, it could be he's 100% guilty.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that like every time I've said stuff like that, like then if you look in the comment section, they're like, you're anti-Tate, you're a piece of garbage. Hey, I don't know the truth. And I know the guys in the comment section don't know, you know, because they seem to believe either they're, look, you can like someone and like what some of what they say or all of what they say, and that person can end up being a bad person. Doesn't mean that everything they ever said was bad. Doesn't mean that it doesn't ring true, that it doesn't have truth to it. It just means that this person did some bad things.
Yeah. So, and I don't think you're really going to be involved in that industry. Just some of the things that he said without, you know, crossing paths with some things that are, you know, on the line of legal or not illegal. And he's even, you know, said in different podcasts about the feds are at my door. You know, I had a very past, I had to flush my phone and stuff. And, you know,
You know how many idiots, like, I don't get what these guys are like. You know how many idiots I know that want to talk to me on Signal?
I don't even know what that is.
Actually, there's multiple apps like that. Download Signal so I can talk to you. Why? You know, bro, because, you know, it's encrypted. Well, I'm not saying anything that needs to be encrypted. Nah, you know, you never know. No, I do know. I do know. There's no reason for me to talk to you on Signal. And I've talked to a few people on Signal, but it always ends up being, it's like, what are we talking about? Like, why are we on this? We're having the same conversation I would have with you on through text.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Well, you know, it's encrypted in case somebody's listening. Well, we're not spies.
Yeah. What do they care?
Right. We're not planning a heist. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, I think people get excited and they want to believe they're a part of something or they're doing something nefariousness to make their lives exciting or something. I don't know. But, you know, it's like flush your phone. Why?
Yeah.
You know, why? Well, but I know guys that really, they'll like work at someplace like Walmart and they act like they're like, you know, they're, bro, you're a manager at Walmart. You're not a gangster. Like, what, you know, maybe they do something stupid every once in a while. They're, I don't know, you know, maybe they think they're doing something, you know, I don't know what's wrong with people. Anyway, the point is that, so I love the fact that the victim, one of the victims came out and said, I'm not a victim and I'm listed as a victim. And I'll give you, and as far as the crooked cop thing is concerned, you know, like, I don't know this guy, but I give you an example. I was in prison with a guy by the name of, I can't remember his last name, because, you know, in prison you'll use either nicknames or last names.
Yeah.
They called him Junior, but his real name was Junier, right? It was French, right? So they, you know, we're Americans, so we can't say a French, you know, Junier. They call him Junior. So Junior was a part of a, and it's funny because I'll bet you a lot of people will remember this. There was a notorious group of police officers, narcotics officers in Atlanta. And for literally, we're talking about 10, 15 years, they would go in and they were robbing drug dealers. And what they would do is they would get no-knock warrants. So they would get some drug addict that had drugs. They say, where'd you get them? And they would give them the name a name and an address. They would then take what they called it was like a certified informant.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody whose information had led to arrests, their word is now good. So they would go to him and they said, listen, you see this address and this name? We need you to sign this affidavit that we can give to a judge so we can get a no-knock warrant and go bust in that door. And so he would sign it because he's scared. He's still either doing drugs or selling drugs. These guys are keeping him, cops are keeping him out of jail. Because a lot of times you're allowed to continue, I mean, not technically, but they allow them to. They'll allow them to keep selling drugs. So we're basically going to protect you and let you sell drugs, use drugs, but you're going to be an informant. So think about it. You've got carte blanche. You're untouchable. So they go to this guy. They say, sign this. They go in, get a warrant signed by a judge. They then go in. They kick in the front door of this house. because they think it's a big drug house. Because remember the guy they grabbed earlier said it was where he got his drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They kick in the door. The woman inside hears this, bam, bam, bam. Somebody's kicking in the door. She gets out of bed, grabs her gun, walks in the hallway. The door busts open. She starts shooting. She hits the cops twice. The cops then gun her down and kill her. Junior killed her. She was a 70-year-old retired school teacher, grandmother. She'd never sold drugs. There were no drugs in the house. The guy gave a fake address. They searched the whole house. They planted drugs. They went and planted. When they realized how bad they screwed up, they went and planted drugs. They said, oh, yeah, you know, we have an informant. Then they go and they track. They're now tracking down their informant because they know there's going to be an investigation. Their informant has to say he already signed the affidavit, but he might change his mind. Junior, out of the whole bunch, was the smartest one. Junior went, that like 2 days later, went straight to the FBI building and said, I want to work out a deal. Because he knew, I just killed an innocent woman. I'm looking at serious prison time. And all of our shenanigans are about to come out.
Mm-hmm.
He buried everybody, all of his co-defendants, all of his partners he'd worked with for 10, 15 years. He buried them all. He was allowed to keep all the money. He ended up doing 5 years, I want to say, and I could be off by a year. He did 5 years in prison in the state and the Fed concurrent. So he did his state time while he was sitting in federal custody. So you assume that, so he's supposed to be doing this. He's doing right now. He's supposed to be in the state, but the feds are holding him. So he had a federal charge and a state charge. So he was allowed to do his state murder charge in the feds in a low security prison. He did 5 years.
And he got to keep all the money from everything he was doing.
Kept all the money.
That kind of rebounds into some things I want to ask you too about, like, what constitutes them taking or not? Like, they seized all Tate stuff, but they don't take this guy's stuff. You know what I mean? Or when you were arrested, like, they take all your things. Like, what constitutes them taking it or not?
Well, I mean, I don't know what Romanian law is, but if they, like in the United States, they would have to prove, well, first of all, they can come seize all my stuff. They could just seize your stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have to prove, no, I bought that stuff with legal money. Now, luckily for Junior, he had a decent salary. Like, his wife had worked, he had a decent salary, and he was able to prove, like, he was very good at laundering the money. So mm-hmm. I'm sure he was able to prove I bought that all this with legitimate stuff. But let's face it, if I go buy $100,000, if I make $100,000 a year and I buy a $200,000 car and I buy a $500,000 house, and like, I could probably prove that I can afford all that. But the truth is, I'm spending a lot of cash. I buy all my groceries with cash, I buy all my clothes with cash, I invest with cash, I do all kinds of, we go on vacation with cash, all those things that you could, that most people spend their money on, he's just using cash. So he's living way beyond his means, and every penny of his law enforcement check is going toward what appears to be legitimate things, and it's coming from a legitimate place, which is mm-hmm. his check. So, you know, but think about it. He's probably got $100,000 worth of furniture that he all bought cash. You know, how do they prove that? Well, where did you get this furniture? Oh, man, I got that at a garage sale 6 years ago. I don't remember. You know, what are they going to do? Come take your couch? Like, you can't prove everything. Plus, he has several legitimate businesses or on the side, whatever. I mean, he's able to do all that stuff because it was illegal cash. And also, they don't look that hard when you're helping them. Mm-hmm. If you're helping the government, we're not going to be too hard on where this money came from or what you did with the money. Plus, what does he really tell them? Yeah, every once in a while we would get $50,000 and split it up. We'd each make $10,000. Like, he's not telling them about how, listen, we're taking easily we're making $100,000. We're splitting $100,000 a week,
mm-hmm.
you know, between all of us. We're making $100,000 or $50,000 to $100,000 in cash, you know, for the last 10 years. He's not telling them that. He's downplaying it. I'm sure they all downplayed what they were stealing. Regardless, what I'm saying is there are crooked cops out there. I've met crooked FBI agents. I've met crooked DEA agents. I've met numerous crooked cops. I've met crooked what is a DSCI? I forget what the name of the military branch that's kind of like the FBI. I've met those guys that ended up in prison. Like I've met lots of narcotics cops, lots of regular police officers. Gosh, what was this guy's name from Chicago? I met a few guys from Chicago. Like they got a lot of dirty cops. And this is one prison. These are cops that are walking around with everybody else. Everybody knows they're cops. So, you know, and this is the thing about Junior, by the way, unrepentant. When we were sitting there talking one time and he was pissed because he thought he was going to be getting out in 6 months and he was going to end up having to do another 6 months more than he thought. Mm-hmm. He was pissed. And I was like, why are you pissed? He's like, I'm pissed because this and this, and our agreement was this and that. It just, you know, it's bullshit. And I went, well, you know, Junior, I said, I hate to bring this up. I said, but you did kill someone. He goes, she shot me twice. And I went, you broke into her house. He goes, I'm a police officer. I said, you broke into her house without a warrant, without ever announcing who you were. Like I'd read the articles. He and I had talked about it. Anyway, you don't, yeah, all right, whatever. I was like, yeah, I'm trying to be a jerk or anything. I mean, you got your time, you did your time, you know, you got what you're supposed to get, and you know, you whatever. But I'm just saying, like, for God's sakes. And he's like, no, you whatever, man. All right, I hear you. Never said, yeah, I fucked up. I'm sorry. I feel sick about it. It was horrible. This woman lived her whole life. She was a retired school teacher. She's a grandmother. She's a decent person, you know. And I, oh, nope. So the idea that, listen, and I talked to many, many police officers. Look at Dowd. Look at Mike Dowd. You know, I talked to these guys, for this guy from Chicago who stuck a drug dealer in the back of his car one time, drove around for hours in the heat, in the middle of summer. He said, I'm telling you right now, he said, I don't know how he was alive. He goes, I really thought we were going to have to dump his body. He said he was half dead when they got him out. He was screaming for water. Listen, it was, and you know, we're talking about just complete torture, no problem. And this guy said one time he showed up to a hearing for somebody he had arrested. He got on the stand and started describing what the guy had done, and the guy just sat there listening to him. He goes, and it was complete bullshit. Everything I was saying was a lie. He was just blatantly on the stand. He said, just lie. I was lying about everything. He said, about halfway through my testimony, the guy leaned over to his lawyer and said, when's my case going to be up? And he goes, this is your case. And he goes, what? Hey, start screaming. That didn't happen. That's not me. He's wrong. What are you? And they had to grab him. They had to drag him out of the courtroom. I mean, so you can imagine, like, the idea that a lot of people think, oh, well, police don't lie, police this, police. Listen, I know lots of police that lie. I know lots of police that have lied. I know lots of police that have put people in prison for a long, long time. And prosecutors, they're horrible. They're horrible. My prosecutor got in front of my federal judge when I was arrested. My girlfriend, who was ex-military, had purchased a gun, right? The gun had been stolen, but she still had the receipt. When they searched my house, they found the receipt. They charged me with possession of a gun, basically. It's called obstruction. No, it's called, I forget the charge exactly. It's not that they're saying that I had one, but they're saying that somebody I was with had a gun, mm-hmm. and I was a felon. So I was charged with, like, it's kind of like conspiracy to possess a firearm by a felon. So I got charged with three years for that. I also had a burglary and I had claimed on my homeowners, you know, I was claiming for homeowners for what they'd stolen, and I was running up the bill. So I said that they had stolen like a machine gun, an M4, like a, sorry, an whatever, a rifle or shotgun, whatever it was, assault weapon, whatever you want. So I put that in there, and that was $1,200. So I was trying to max out the policy, and I just listed it. Now, during my debriefing, I explained to the U.S. attorney that I had never had that weapon. I'd never had one, the M4 or AR-15, whatever it was. I'd never had that weapon. That wasn't true. And that the pistol or the gun that they had that they'd found the receipt for was my girlfriend's, and I'd never touched it. I'd never seen it, and she purchased it. I said, so you have to drop those charges. I end up getting them to drop the charges. Eventually, they drop the charges. At first, I signed for them because I didn't think it was a big deal. You know, my lawyer was saying, like, sign, just do it. You know, she just wanted, you know, she wasn't very much help. But eventually, I ended up arguing about it, and they dropped the charges. And I was saying, look, I'll go to trial. Like, you can go talk to my girlfriend. She'll tell you, I never had that gun. We never had a fucking machine gun. Whatever it was I had put down. Mm-hmm. When the U.S. attorney got in front of the judge, knowing that wasn't true, she told the judge, Mr. Cox had a gun that he never should have had, and he had an M4 assault rifle or whatever it was, she said, that he also knew he never should have possessed. I mean, she dropped the charges, and she knew it wasn't true. She talked to my girlfriend at the time. She told her it wasn't true. Still got up in front of the judge and said it. Now, that's inflammatory. It makes the judge hate you. But really, she just got in front of the judge and blatantly lied. Law enforcement lies all the time to get search warrants. Prosecutors lie all the time to get warrants. They'll get in front of the judge and blatantly lie. They'll stack the case against you. They'll put people on the stand that will lie against you. So what I'm saying is, do I believe, is it possible that this is all, it's all being manufactured? You know, that's very possible. And I think that is impartial. I don't know that it's not true. This guy may go to trial and he may get found guilty. He may end up doing 10 years in a Romanian prison, which would be hell. And as far as his stuff getting, taken, you know, look, they can seize your stuff, and then you go and you have to kind of prove. They'll seize your stuff, and you go and prove, look, I made that money legitimately. Here's how I made it. Here's, you know, and then they have to give you the stuff back. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. A lot of times, what they do is they start seizing your stuff. Part of that's just a scare tactic.
Yeah,
they're just doing it to scare you, let you know how bad things are. Oh, we're already selling your stuff off. Like, it's a done deal. But his lawyer is saying, look, she's saying, look, you know, we're gonna fight the charges. Like, this is all BS. Like, this is all trumped up. It's not true. And they can't sustain these charges. And, you know, so I'm assuming Tate's going to fight this in court.
Possibly. And I know there's have you seen anything on the Vice documentary coming out? Like, I know they had the little series about, or not the series, but the teaser of the girl coming forth. Like right after we did that last podcast, say nobody's came forth yet. And they're supposed to release the full one in like 2 to 3 days.
Right.
On Friday. And I have seen some clips on YouTube, of like the editing. They're like editing different reactions into some of the interviews, and the whole time, like Tate and them know that they're being like, that Vice is making a documentary, like a hit piece on them. Like, they have the guy who's like constructing the interview on their podcast or whatever they do. Have you seen those clips?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like the guy sitting in between them, and like Tate or the Andrew doesn't care. And the other brothers like doesn't like the guy.
Yeah. They're going back and forth, and he's kind of loading the questions. And I don't, you know, as far as like, you know, first of all, I don't like Vice. I mean, you know, I know some things.
Yeah. I don't know how much you can talk about it all, but yes.
Oh man, I could talk forever about Vice. I mean, I really got screwed over by Vice. Ultimately, do you know that, right? Like they took that case.
I know a little bit. Like,
yeah, I mean, I was dealing with a production company. Like, Vice doesn't actually do their own stuff, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Netflix. Like they'll say it's a Netflix production. No, it's not really. Netflix hired a production company, or a production company came to Netflix and said, we want to do something. Well, you put up the money, and Netflix puts up the money, and then they go out and they do this whole production, and then they bring it, Netflix airs it, right? They stream it. Mm-hmm. So, and then Netflix calls it a Netflix production, but Netflix didn't do it. It was really done by, you know, Wise Productions or, you know, Red Dog, you know, Studios or whatever. Who does a lot of them? Blumhouse, that sort of thing. So, you know, I had a production company that does it. They do, there's a production company, they do stuff for Vice, and they produce the series. I was a teen felon. So they contacted me. And they said, look, they wanted to talk to John Bozsiak, which was a story I had written, right? I wrote Bozsiak, with Bozsiak, I wrote his memoir. It's a true crime story. So, I mean, for those people that don't know, like I write true crime stories, right? Like I've gotten stuff in Rolling Stone magazine. I've optioned several stories. I've written like 8 books. So they wanted Bozsiak's story because he was a teenager when he was doing a lot of crime, and it carried on until to adulthood. And I was like, yeah. And they'd read his story. And they said, we would love to talk to this guy. And I said, no, I've already optioned his life rights. You can't talk to him. We've already got a deal with a production company for a long series, for a multi-series, a documentary. So they said, and I said, what are you looking for? And they told me what they were looking for. I said, listen, I got another guy, and his name is Jacob Diaz. I said, you can talk to Jacob Diaz. So I contact Jacob Diaz. I put them in contact with Jacob Diaz, and I say, look, I mean, obviously you've obviously read my story I wrote on him. They were like, right. I said, well, that's your whole series. That's your whole episode. And they said, what do you want? And I said, well, I mean, I want 20 grand. I want an executive producer credit. I've written your whole episode.
Yeah.
They came back and she said, look, we could probably give you 10 grand. I could probably do 10 grand. I said, look, well, 10 grand. I said, that's, I'm good with 10. And she said, okay, let me talk to him, see if he's willing to do it. I need to talk to him, make sure he's okay with being interviewed. I said, yeah, no problem. So she contacted him. I didn't hear from her. Then I contacted her like 2 weeks later. I said, hey, what happened? And she said, oh yeah, I sent him something, but I haven't heard back. And she sent me a copy of the letter she sent him. She said, but I haven't spoken with him yet. Then a month or so later, I sent her, I called her. No answer, left a voicemail, didn't hear from her. Then I tried to call Jacob Diaz, sent him an email, didn't hear from him, which was weird.
Yeah.
6 to 8 months later, which is actually a very quick turnaround time, by the way. 6 to 8 months later, a friend of mine from prison, I'm talking to him on the phone. He said, hey, by the way, I just saw the Jacob Diaz story on Vice. I go, what? He goes, yeah. He said, my story was called The Unlikely Narco. He goes, yeah, bro. He said, I just saw it. He said, it's called The Cartel Kid. I went on Vice's website. Sure enough, complete interview. My story, a really hatch job of my story. Like they really brutalized the story. It wasn't nearly as good. But then again, my story was probably 10,000 words. They can maybe put 3,000 words on screen. Mm-hmm. So in roughly 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did what they could. Anyway, I immediately contact the producer. I leave a voicemail. I go on Danny's show on Concrete. I bitch and moan about it. They contact me like the next day. A lawyer contacts me. I get on the phone with the lawyer. I start going back and forth. They end up, I tell them, look, you know, this is, she said, well, look, we gave you a credit. At the very end, they did give me a credit. They gave me a consulting producer credit. I don't even know what that is. It's made up. Yeah. Anyway, and I argue with her and I said, listen, here's the best bet, your best bet. And I tell her, I said, look, I've sued Warner Brothers. I've sued IE Entertainment. You know, I'm like, look, you're not going to steal from me. Like, you're going to give me something. So come up with a figure. Probably a couple days later, she sends me this figure, and I can't say what it is. I signed something. She said, look, how about this? Now, it wasn't what I wanted, but it was a nice little chunk of change. And, you know, I signed the paper, and they cut me a check a couple days later. And, you know, that's what it is. But you know, they're all snakes, bro. They're all snakes. So Vice, I don't trust Vice. Vice is, they're horrible. They're completely, it's just a gossip channel. Like it's garbage. So I don't trust Vice. I think, you know, they're looking for sensationalism. They want that whole thing to be true, you know? And like I said, maybe it is true, but yeah. I don't see it.
It's a battle for attention. Everybody's just trying to battle for to make the headlines, really. Now, I know we talked a little bit about it before we started recording, was like the whole Andrew Tate going to the hospital for his a lung nodule or something with their chest. I thought it was interesting on an article that I read is saying that he was requesting to go to the hospital. And when they took him, you know, his media team's tweeting for them and running some of their social media pages.
Right.
This YouTuber Sneeko is like, you know, there's a couple big streamers, big YouTubers that are like close with Tate or close, you know, they're always like reporting on him stuff. And he was reading the message from the media team from Andrew Tate saying like, please like make the world care about Andrew Tate's health. Let them know like to, you know, like spread the message. So they're pulling strings on their end, trying to, you know, rally the troops and, yeah. They're everywhere. You know,
it's funny though. I mean, the problem with all my stories is they're very Andrew Tate right now.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's all a set. Like, hey, listen, now it might all be true. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, I'll put it this way. Now he's asthmatic, right? Like Tate's got asthma.
Yeah.
That's one of the things he has. There was a guy that was transferred to Coleman. Coleman was a prison I was at. So he was transferred and he got there at like, I don't know, 2 or 3 by the time they process him. He gets on the yard, 2 or 3. He's in the unit. He goes to the officer and he says, listen, I have asthma. I need my inhaler. They didn't give me my inhaler. Like I was supposed to pick it up at medical. And he says, look, you can go to medical after count. Now the officer knows that medical's closed after count. You know, but he doesn't want to deal. He doesn't have that. He don't have to make the phone call. You know, the officers are garbage.
Yeah.
And he probably thinks that the asthma thing isn't that big of a deal. Right? Like a lot of people have asthma and it's not super severe. Well, this guy's super severe. This guy's like, look, I'm under a lot of stress. I've been moved. I haven't taken it all day. It's a big deal. Yeah. You're going to be counted at 4 o'clock. I'll send you over there after. So at four o'clock, they do count and it's shift change. So the next officer comes in. Next officer says, when they release us, you can go over there. Well, by the time they release you, it's closed. Like they close it basically 4. They call, he's calling the, he goes and tries to talk to the lieutenant. The lieutenant's like, they're gone. I don't know what to tell you. He's like, no, you don't understand. This is a big deal. This is a big deal. He's freaking out. He tells him if he doesn't calm down, he's going to throw him in the shoe. This guy's freaking out. He's calling, he's trying to call his family. He's telling everybody about it. He's horrified. So he ends up going to bed. They tell him he'll be fine. Calm down. He goes to bed. He wakes up the next day. He's dead. He had an asthmatic attack in the middle of the night and he died. I don't know how bad Andrew Tate's is, but I wouldn't want to be in prison and need my inhaler.
Yeah.
So is it serious? You know, maybe. Maybe he's got light asthma and he just needs to, you know, take a few breaths and calm down and it won't be that bad, you know, but it could be. What was the other thing we were gonna?
So it was the lawyer. We covered that. There was the Vice interview coming out. You know, some things that, you know, that just released after the podcast. We could cover that. The assets being seized and the girlfriend defending him. That's the majority of it. I mean, there's supposed to be. I don't know if it's still standing with him being in the hospital, but there was supposed to be, like, you know, a rehearing or whatever it's called, where, you know, on January 10th, he's supposed to find out if he's going to stay in there for the full 30 days.
Yeah, they're trying to get him out, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's still in fact now that he's, you know, seeking medical attention or that's going to get delayed. And the next thing is just the Vice interview coming out, you know, basically Thursday night, midnight, Friday morning. So.
Yeah, the Vice interview. You know, it's so funny. You know how many times the media has come out with these things And then the guy ends up being innocent. They sue him and they have to pay him $5 million or something ridiculous. Like but hey, maybe, you know, maybe it's absolutely true. What kills me about the women and, you know, these women may be, you know, maybe it's true, but I keep jumping back to, do you remember the high school football player that got, and this isn't the only guy, there's dozens of these guys, but it was a big case where it was a high school football player. And there was a girl that said he raped her on school grounds. He raped her. She went immediately, said he raped me. He did that whole thing. He gets arrested. He goes to trial because he says, I did not rape her.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said he didn't even have sex with her. And he ends up losing at trial and he gets like 10 or 12 years. I think he did 5 or 6 years, maybe 7 or 8 years. I forget how much time he did. He gets out and she hits him up. Now keep in mind, this guy's now a registered sex offender. Oh, he also had like a high school, he had a scholarship to some university. Like he's a big time like football player.
Yeah.
She hits him up on Facebook, finds out he's out, hits him up on Facebook. They start talking. She tells him while they're talking, he says, look, why did this happen? Like, why did you do that? Why? And she says, look, she says, you know, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have, but you know, I figured we could sue. There had been another case where a girl had been sexually, molested or raped by a student or a teacher or something along those lines, but it wasn't on school grounds. So she said, I knew that if I said something happened to me on school grounds, we could sue. And they got like $2.5 million in a settlement.
From like the school board
from school board. So he chums up to her like, hey, it's not a big deal. It's over now. It's fine. He invites her over, sets up a hidden camera and video records her. She says it all over again. He talks to you and she's like, what do you want to talk about? He's like, I just don't understand why you did that. Like, so I don't understand. Why did you even say that I raped you on school grounds? She says it all over again, mm-hmm. Whole thing. He takes it to the police. You know what the police did? Nothing. Statute of limitations is up. We can't charge her. Now if it had been a man, they'd have found something to charge him with. But they didn't charge her. They do end up expunging his record. He ended up getting some kind of a scholarship or something, or he got to do several tryouts with several teams or something. I forget how it ended up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one case. There's a bunch of other cases just like that where, you know, somebody gets accused. They then go to trial. They say, I didn't do this. You know, I knew a guy in prison who was in prison and he said we'd actually, you know, he'd actually gone on several dates with her. He said, we had sex. He said, and then like 2 days later, she said that I forced myself on her. He ended up I took a plea of like sexual battery or something. He said, because I was going to go to trial. They got all the way up to the trial and they said, we'll reduce it to sexual battery. And he said, okay, I'll take it. He said, because I was terrified. I was scared to death. He said, she's going to get on there and start crying. Like I've seen people go to jail before I didn't do anything. But then again, I know it's my word against her word. And that's what it looks like it's coming down to with the Tate thing. The problem is he's made such an ass out of himself by being so overwhelmingly crassed about his delivery of his message.
Yeah.
That seems to me like he has given them enough to hang him with.
Yeah. I think it seems like he's almost dug his own hole. Yeah.
And like I said, 80% of his message, like I kind of agree with some of the stuff. I think it's cringe, but you know, some of it's just over the top.
Yeah. And I've seen different interviews of him talking about how, like, there's two ways to say things, and he's like, I'm going to say it the more negative way. You know what I mean? To pull those reactions to get that get those clicks and those hits. So
yeah, he wants that attention. Well, that attention's coming back on him then.
Yeah, but he's got a good a good marketing play, just to like, he's doing all these things that he knows can get him in trouble, but it's almost played off like the Matrix. Like, it's the Matrix attacking. You know, it's a lot of different things moving. It's interesting for sure.
Well, listen, I guess, you know, we'll only time will tell. We'll see what happens, right? Like,
yeah.
The problem is, no matter what prediction you make right now, in 2 weeks from now, something else will come out.
Yeah.
In 3 months from now, when he's going to trial, or 6 months when he's going to trial. Oh, I didn't tell you about the guy.
Which one?
I didn't tell you about the guy, that the lawyer that contacted me from Romania.
I was contacting a lawyer trying, or go ahead. I don't know.
No, this is a guy. He's not, he's got a law degree. So he's a computer engineer. I think he said he was a computer engineer. He works as a computer engineer, and he also works as a lawyer. He got his law degree like 5 years ago. I want to say in 2017.
Yeah.
He said, and this is strange, he said he didn't pass the bar, but he does practice law. And I went, he didn't, he said they have an equivalent to the bar in Romania. And he said, there are ways around it. If there's like a third, I forget how he said it, but it's almost like friends and family you can represent, but you can't charge. Like, you can represent people, but you can't charge them. He said, mm-hmm. So I have actually been to court several times, and I have represented several people. He said, I know the legal system here very well. I asked him if he would be on the program, but he said, and at first of all, I asked him because he writes very well.
Yeah.
And I said, do you speak as well as you write? And he came back. I was hoping he did, because listen, his writing was better than most Americans that write me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, correct capitalization, punctuation, sentence structure, paragraphs. I mean, he did very well. And he came back and he said, unfortunately, he said, I write way better than I speak. He said, I would come off like a Russian mobster. Like, my English is extremely choppy. He said, so I don't think I could be on your program. Because I was saying, hey, let's do an interview. Let's talk about this. Now, his take on the Romanian system, and the reason he contacted me, he said that he'd watch a video of ours. He'd also watch one on Valuetainment.
Mm-hmm.
He did not like the way Patrick Bet David on Valuetainment had talked about Romania. He said he spoke very negatively. He said, you seem much more fair about your understanding of Romania. He said, and your understanding of Romania, he said, you also made it clear that that's also 20 years ago. And he said, and 20 years ago, you were spot on. He said, the mob was everywhere. Corruption was everywhere. He said, now, because they're a part of the EU, he said, it's way different. He said, there's been a real crackdown on corruption. He said that the prosecutor and the investigating team that looked into Andrew Tate, he said they've had some of the biggest cases out there. He said their conviction rate is extremely high. He said, if they've arrested him, they feel they've got a very strong case. He said, I had said that, like, in the state, they would arrest you and then investigate.
Yeah.
He said that the people that arrested Andrew Tate were the equivalent of the FBI. It wasn't like a state.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and very much like your FBI, he said, although they certainly don't have the budget your FBI has, he said, they don't just arrest somebody if they haven't already thoroughly investigated them and feel they have the ability to convict them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying it's bad. He goes, I hope he's not guilty of these charges. He said, but to be honest with you, if they've arrested him, he goes, they certainly think he is guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was, I wish he would have come on. I mean, he wrote so well.
Hey, maybe he's just, I mean, I'm sure maybe he's his worst critic. Maybe we get a quick phone call just to do a little test. I mean, I think that people would definitely want to hear that side. You know what I mean? I was reaching out to a Romanian lawyer just this morning trying to get somebody because, you know, they can provide different input than, you know, someone who doesn't live over there can.
Right, right.
Like I had some college kids. I had some college kids who actually live over there. They have a YouTube channel. They interviewed people just in the streets about, do you think he's guilty? Do you think he should be arrested or whatever? You know?
Right.
And
what'd they say?
It was mixed. It was a bunch of kids, you know, or, you know, young people, mostly young people. And it's like 50-50, you know, people are saying, no, they shouldn't be arrested. And other people are saying, you know, he's this and that, like he should be locked up. They're glad. So it's just, you know, two sides of the spectrum. And, like some of the friends that were sitting together had opposite opinions and like, they were like all upset. I shot them a message to see if they'd want to be on, but I don't know if they really would provide too much of a, I don't know. You know, they live in Romania. They're not from there though. They've been there for a few years. They're running a YouTube channel. I'll send you the video. You know, I don't know what type of, input they could provide, but, maybe they could just provide what Romanians think about Andrew Tate.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, right?
Yeah.
That might be.
Yeah, so we'll do that. As far as what I think, I mean, I would think he'd probably get eventually convicted of something just from all the sound bites, all the things that he said, you know.
Not going to play well in front of a jury.
Yeah, you know.
That's the big problem. You got to go in front of a jury at some point.
Yeah.
But sometimes a jury sees – sometimes a jury gets the best or sometimes a jury just, you know, they get it right. And sometimes they get it wrong, but most of the time they really kind of get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll see.
If he's found guilty.
We'll see.
And then also maybe the prosecutor's overreached. You remember Casey Anthony?
Yeah. Whatever happened. I don't know. Whatever happened to her.
So Casey Anthony, you know, and I'm sure, you know, look, she was found not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I think happened and what I think most people think happened was she had used some kind of chloroform to make her daughter go to sleep so she could go out partying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably what happened is her daughter ended up dying. If you give someone too much chloroform, it'll kill you. It's a very, it's iffy. So they tried her and, you know, there's a lot of, Jose Bayo was her lawyer. And, you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And he alluded to the fact that her father had molested her and all these things.
Yeah.
But in the end, what happened was they, you know, she looked extremely guilty, but murder's very hard. Here's the problem. They initially had charged her with like first degree murder and then like manslaughter. Manslaughter basically, first degree murder is like, you know, look, like you killed somebody. You know, you did something and that person died. You know, did you plan to do it? Who knows? Is it first or third degree? One of them is lying in wait. Like you went out of your way to murder this person. Like nobody really said she tried to kill her. You know, you wanted her dead. You wanted her, you know, you tried to kill her. So, but they were saying, look, you killed her. Like you did something to kill her. But then there's also manslaughter, which is you did something unintentional that led to someone's death. You know, like vehicular manslaughter. Like you got into a car accident and somebody died.
Mm-hmm.
And it was your fault. You didn't mean to, but as a result of your action, someone died. That's manslaughter. So they initially had, one of the charges was manslaughter. They dropped manslaughter because they only wanted to give the jury the choice of murder. Like you're either going to let her go free, or you're going to convict her of murder. And they felt like, there's no way they let her go free. They're going to give her a charge of murder. The problem is you didn't really prove murder. You know, that's a pretty high bar. And there was a chance that maybe some that her father may have killed her, or that it was complete accident and her father disposed of the body. But because they didn't get the prosecution team overreached and removed manslaughter, the jury was unwilling to convict her of murder. Not guilty. Hmm. Yeah. She's found not guilty.
I remember that name. I was so young when it happened. I never knew what happened.
Listen, that was the only bet I ever made in federal prison. That they had a guy going, there was a ticket going around with soups, and it was like 20-1. You put up one soup, you get 20 soups if it's not guilty. Everything else was like, 2-1, 4-1. And I put up a soup and I won 20 soups. Only time, because I said not guilty. I said murder is very hard to prove. She's got a great lawyer. He's giving them reasonable doubt. And I said, and I don't see a jury finding her guilty. I said, plus the truth is, you don't think she did it? I said, no, I think she did it. I think she did it. I just don't think that they're going to find her guilty. I said, and to be honest, if I'm wrong, what do? I lose one soup.
Yeah.
I get 20. And sure enough, I got 20. I was one of the few people that actually bet, that actually ever said, everybody was like, she's guilty, she's guilty.
So how does that betting work? Like, you got one guy who's like, who's taking the hit on those 20 soups?
Yeah, but how many people had said guilty or guilty of this or guilty? They had different. She had different charges.
Yeah, yeah.
So that guy obviously collected all those soups, and very few people said not guilty.
Yeah.
So he paid me. I think it might have been 10-1. It was high though. It was worth it. This used to irritate everybody. I used to, and this is kind of an Andrew Tate thing. I used to say guys were like, "Yeah, man, she's a piece of garbage," and I would say, I'd date her. She seems like she'd be a lot of fun. She's hot. I think she'd be a lot of fun to hang out. They'd be like, you would date her? I'm like, well, we wouldn't have kids with her. I wouldn't let her watch my kids. Like if we got together and we started dating and then suddenly she said, Matt, I love you and I want to have kids. I'd be like, Casey, now come on. You know you can't have kids. You know we're not doing the kids thing. You know how it worked out. You're not good with kids. But, we can, so I'm very good with compartmentalizing. You have some friends you go to dinner with, but, you wouldn't lend them money. That sort of thing. So I'm good with that. Hey, so I appreciate you guys watching. And if you like the video, do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell so you get notified of videos just like this. Plus, by the way, I do a ton of interviews with criminals and former criminals and maybe current criminals. Also, leave me a comment in the comment section. Share the video. And, listen, I try and respond to the bulk of the comments. I'm a little bit lax because there's so many coming in at this point. But, yeah, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you watching. See ya.